Hello and welcome to Full Chat with me, David Prutton.
And me, Ewan Thomas, celebrating all things we love about being on two wheels.
Full Chat is powered by Bikeshaw. As the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, Bikeshaw will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your annual bike, scooter or moped insurance and much, much more.
So please don't forget, press your follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from so you never miss an episode. Or even better, you can watch the entire episodes on YouTube. That way you get to see what we like. And also, even better, you can see what our very handsome guest today looks like because he's an absolute don.
That certainly is the case, because our guest today, as Ewan said, is not only a handsome sporting gent, but a sporting powerhouse, a double gold medal winner in the Olympics in Sydney and Athens, as well as the small matter of six further gold medals in the World Rowing Championships. He's rowed the Atlantic, he's been to the South Pole. It makes me feel incredibly tired just reading this. It's the one and only Mr. James Cracknell, OBE. Hello, James. How are you?
Hi there. Doing all right, thanks. All right.
I've got to add, on top of all the accolades and what this man has achieved, he's an absolute monster. He can do anything he puts his mind to, but he's also a bloody nice chap, just to chuck it in there. He's a decent man as well. In fact, it's very decent, James, that you are joining us. So just so people know, the morning we are recording this is the morning after the London Marathon, where I know what I'd be like. I'd be in bed, not wanting to talk to anyone, but yet you are here talking to us. And go on, give us the news. How well did it go? Because I know you love the marathons.
I loved it for the first half. It's one of those things that it's very hard to coincide the finish line with emptying your tanks. And unfortunately, mine emptied about halfway. So it was a long second half. And I wanted to walk every mile. I was counting the miles from 13 onwards. And then the crowd, if you walk, just abuse you. So I... I should keep running.
David, I've got to tell you something, props. Right? Oh. You're talking to a man who, honestly, is the toughest man I've ever met mentally. Mm. Right? I remember once we were going to London Marathon. We're on the VIP bus. And I said to James, he had his headphones in, like you've got today. He had his headphones in, into his pocket. I tapped him. I said, what are you listening to? He said, I can hear you. I said, well, what do you listen to when you run? He went, nothing. He pulled it out and it was attached to nothing. I said, well, why are you wearing headphones? He said, so no one talks to me. I don't want to be disturbed. I'm in the zone. And at that point I said, all right, I'll leave you to
end
it.
The conversation. Yeah. I mean, it's immense. I mean, and the fact that you're saying there, James, that people, if you are walking at parts of the London Marathon, you get a kick up the backside. My God, that shows the standard that people expect from someone like yourself. I mean, who were you running for? Can you tell us that?
I suffered a nasty accident 10 years ago. So I was running for Headway, the Brain Injury Association, and also a war memorial in Colchester as well, a community war memorial that needs to be resurfaced.
You were running, as you said, for some amazing charities, and quite frankly, we talk on this podcast obviously about motorbikes, but also on two wheels. You did nearly lose your life. If you weren't wearing that helmet, you wouldn't be here talking to us today. So when you're running for such a special reason personally for you, that must help you get to the finish line.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because it's the people, quite right, you don't sponsor you for taking part, they sponsor you to get to the end. So as much as you might think, okay, I'll step off and get the tube back, then you realise how, especially for, it's the biggest charity day in the country. £65 million was raised yesterday, and it makes such a big difference to people's lives. So, yeah.
You mentioned it, James, and Ewan just referenced it there as well. With regards to that accident, and I'm not saying this in a reductive term of just talking that, and that is then the defining moment in your life, but has that given you a different perspective on it, everything that came after that? And are you a fundamentally a different man to the one that you were before that?
It definitely worked. When I was knocked off by a fuel truck, it's a wing where it hit the back of my head. So I was in a coma for 10 days. And during that coma, my wife found out she was pregnant with our third. And then it kind of, and she's 13 now, I never would have seen her. It also, in terms of the impact it has, when I left hospital, the neurologist said, actually to me and Bev, my wife at the time, she said, 80% of people with a brain injury get divorced. And where you are after 3 years is where you'll be for the rest of your life. And Bev and I did end up separating. Whether it would have been happened anyway, who knows? But I think what's really affected me for a long time until I really did something about it, was people's perceptions of what you can do after a serious accident like that. Oh, you won't. And experts telling you won't be able to do that. And I was like, well, you didn't know me before.
Yeah.
But it's also convincing people. And I then started to doubt it. And that's when I went back to university and to Cambridge. So if I can achieve academically here and do as a rowing race between Oxford and Cambridge, if I can do that, then people won't say, are you okay after the accident? I would have kind of proved that mentally and physically I'm back, and that's a really, I think we've got a lot of stigma surrounding brain injury. So I think people talk about how hard it is and other people's perceptions and then what you need to make a recovery. And I had a friend who was taken out of the special forces through injury. And he was like, mate, anytime you want to phone up and just say how crap it is and horrible it is, you have lots of people giving you sympathy, but you just, if you just want to vent, just vent. Because I found it when people were saying, oh, we're so sorry this happened. He said, I just wanted to just say, it is rubbish. I didn't sign up for this, all that stuff. And it's just having that, because you can't really unload on the people close to you because they're going through it as well. So having a proper mate to talk to and just happy to be a venting machine was really good.
Yeah. We talk a lot on this pod about, the escapism, the freedom a motorbike gives you. Mm-hmm. But because you came so close to death and obviously had a brain injury, do you ride your bike differently now? I'm assuming you're pretty sensible anyway. No one wants to come off a bike, but are you more self-aware that, hang on a minute, these two wheels I'm about to get on motorbikes can be really dangerous? Or do you live life like, do you know what? I've got a second chance in life. I'm going to be on my bike all the time. How do you view motorbiking now compared to before the accident?
Riding's changed when I passed my test in 1990-91, in that then traffic wasn't so bad that cars would often, if they're in a jam, do a U-turn out of it. So you get clipped a couple of times, whereas now everyone's so used to being a traffic jam, they generally stay there. And also, especially in London, they're used to mopeds buzzing through, so they don't go around like that. I think after the accident, I'm glad it happened that I was hit from behind. So I've got no memory of something pulling out in front of me or coming straight head on, which makes it easy definitely get back on a push bike. What made me ride my motorbike differently was I used to present BSB on ITV. And Leon Haslam and Ron Haslam, they've got a school up in Donington. And I went up there and then Leon was there and riding around, just mucking about as he does. And then he was like, follow me, go around it. And then he goes, right, you're doing all this stuff wrong. I'll show you when to be, follow me, and I'll show you where the line and the gear. And I was like, okay, I'll do that. And then I was keeping up, and I thought, I'm going really well. This is my edge. He's going to be so impressed. And then he turned around in the corner. And a part of me is thinking, he's got no radio, no head-to-head helmet. How's he going to tell me what gear to be in? And then he turns around, and then I think I go fast around the bend. And he goes, third gear, like that. Like, okay, that's how you ride a bike. This bike is way more of a bike than I am a rider. So that, more than the accident, made me think, okay, what I've got between my legs is far more powerful than I deserve.
And that in itself, James, that's a sliding scale, isn't it? I mean, the lovely people that we've spoken to so far on the podcast, it's the fascination of where the journey starts and where it is right now. So when you kind of think back to it, so take us back to when you passed your test, to when you took your test and what kind of bikes you were on at the time. Do you remember that sense of being given the freedom where they say, right, we'll do this, get to the end, you're sat there nervously waiting for the verdicts, whether it's a thumbs up or a thumbs down, you get the shout that you've passed your test. Can you remember what that feeling was like?
Because then we had to do tests. You had to do your apprenticeship on a 125.
Yeah.
And you're on a budget, so you buy the cheapest 125 you can. And so in my test, the indicators broke, so I had to go to arm signals. So I'm thinking, oh, this is not good.
So that's not an instant fail then. There's still didn't mind you cracking up. Yeah.
And then, I don't know if I rubbed him up the wrong way, but the question he asked, because he didn't have the whole sit-down form thing that you do with driving just now. He was like, what's the black stripe on the lollipop lady's stick for?
What? Wow. What?
It's blackboard material. So they used to have a chalk to write the reg number of a car that didn't stop to show the police.
So, no way.
Yeah. Funny enough, I got that one wrong, but he let me off that one. I was like, that must have been his question he had lined up. So, yeah, I was expecting him to say, I'll see you again. But he passed. And then I was choosing what to go on, what to get at my first bike. And I went on a mate had an RD350, which I didn't really know about the two-stroke power band or anything. So we went through it. And I was like, okay, I may not get that one. That's his.
I failed my test first time because I skidded on some emergency stop. I did a skid on some leaves and I was actually well impressed with the skid. I thought that was decent. That.
The fact that you got off and went boom, Ewan, was, I think that's where the instructor didn't enjoy it.
What did you go for then, James? What was your first bike? Because I went from a 125 to an R1. I just went all on. You know, I had a long time off in between. But what was your first bike then?
So, the R1, it's about 30 years now, hasn't it? It was in there. There was actually one in the garage with like 5 miles on. And a guy bought it, gone down at the first roundabout, then brought it back and said he didn't want it. I went for FZR600 was my first bike, Yamaha.
Very nice. And was it, because the thing that, obviously it's different now, and I speak to varying people of different ages that are coming through the test and how incremental it is, that bit where you go, as you say, James, CBT test, 125, you wait, and it's suddenly that understanding and appreciation of all right, so I can, as long as I can afford it, I can get whatever size of bike I can. Yeah, and you kind of go, well, that's insane. But then you go out and go, right, I'm going to definitely go for that. Did you feel that kind of respect for the power that you then had, as you said, between your legs? and then that sense of being able to kind of, because what I've always kind of got my head in with regards to the type of bike that you get is, it doesn't have to be the biggest engine. I just think at the very kind of survival sense, you need enough just to get you out of trouble, don't you? Just to get away from potential situations. Not saying tear ass enough or anything, but if I need to get through that gap, I can get through it. Was there a sense of understanding and appreciating that sense of the freedom allied to the power that you were able to be in control of now?
Yeah, definitely that. And also, you know, being 6'3", it's just that anything too small would have been really uncomfortable. And also, I was going into a situation of, as their budget comes into it, I didn't have a car. So I was going to just the bike all year. Mm. So then you needed to make sure it was one that you kind of could ride, could take you a long way as well. And then it was a case of, well, and budget, yeah, but you can go from within, you know, $8,000 secondhand, you can get a car that I'll never be able to afford. And that's where the respect comes from. And there weren't any cameras around either when I first started, so it's a whole different world. But yeah, and it's my parents were very much against me getting a bike, and it's one of those things that parents say: don't get a tattoo, don't get a bike, don't you know what's up. And so I turned up when I passed my test on my bike, and my dad was really just went really quiet, and I spoke to my mum, and then he said that when your dad got a bike in the 50s. Him and his mate brought it together and tossed the coin who'd ride it home. And his mate got hit by a bus and died.
Oh, Christ. No
like,
way.
And I was like, Dad, if you told me that, rather than what sounds like a typical parent going, don't drink, don't ride, you know, all that stuff.
What about your boys? You knowing what your dad went through psychologically, their granddad, would you say to your kids, nah, no bikes for you, or are you going to let them, if they want, have one?
You want a push bike as well.
Yeah,
I mean, we put that in the middle of all you've just said and what the question that Ewan's just asked you. So, as you say, your offspring and the fact that you get back on a bike. I mean, there's so many different layers and dynamics to that particular situation. That must be so hard.
Just, you know, I think about the route more on a push bike now than I did before. Mm. I always wore a helmet because I've ridden a motorbike, so it just seems like a. The worst thing is going to muck up your hair. The best thing will save your life. So that's the way I look at it. And that's with my lad. It's wear a helmet. And he pushes back against that, and it's like it's not. And he even though he knows what happened, he's you know, he now is, you know, an avid helmet wearer and telling his mates to wear helmets. So that I think as soon as I think I'd rather. Okay, you rode BMX as you, but you watch guys on, you know, with BMX at the Olympics or bike racing, they know how to fall off in a way that I don't, and. I'd rather he didn't start riding a bike or riding a motorbike, you know, later in life because I told him not to. That actually, I'd rather he just got, you know, pick up the habits when he's younger of and more natural and able to learn.
Here's one for you then. I've never asked you this. I think it's quite an interesting question if I do say so myself. Obviously, your parents don't want you on a bike. Be careful. Your teammates, right? So someone like Tim Fox, Tim's cool. I can see him perhaps riding a bike. Redgrave, no chance. I don't imagine him on a motorbike. Matthew Pinson, possibly. But when you're in a team event, let's call it a team sport, you know, you're relying on them and they certainly are relying on you. How reluctant were they for you to get on a motorbike? Because come on, if you fall off and hurt yourself and you've got the Olympics that year, you're messing up their chances as well.
Yeah, Matt and I, Tim didn't ride a bike. He's a little bit like the pinball wizard in that he's not, eyesight's not great and his hearing's not great, so
just stay away from him then. Jesus.
He's great to share a room with though, because he rolls over on his good ear and he can't hear anything, so he can just put a TV on or whatever. So it's very Matthew and I, we would on 1st of January of Olympic year, we wouldn't ride the bikes until after the Olympics. So we'd have whatever 9 months of not riding, so.
And what about your coach? Your coach was a very strict man. I mean, he knew you rode bikes, I'm assuming?
Yeah, he did, yeah. He was Olympic year, he was fine with. And no skiing either, no downhill skiing, so stuff like that.
Right, there's a quick bit of mid-show housekeeping for you all. If you haven't already, please press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from so you never miss an episode, or you can watch it as you're probably doing now right here on YouTube.
So now, James, let me just ask you, your daily, I know you live in West London and the traffic's awful. If you're just going to go somewhere, you're popping out, is it the car or the bike? What takes the first choice for you nowadays as a mode of transport? Forget going out to relax and get away from the world. What is your A to B vehicle?
Yeah, a bike. Actually, my A to B vehicle is into town is I've got a Forza 300, which is... Although it's brilliant in that it's got the same footprint as a 125, it's bad in that it just gets you in a lot of trouble. But that is great. And then out of town, CB1000, Honda CB1000, which is nice. Very nice. Yeah.
So I'm up in North Yorkshire, and then I come down to London. And as and when time fits, I would always prefer to come down on my bike. But there is, I don't know whether it's something that I've bullied myself into doing, and whether you get the reverse effect, James, if you leave London on a bike and go somewhere else, you have to get into London mode. When you get down there on your motorbike, you have to absolutely get into London mode. And that's kind of, well, this is my lane, so you can do one. You've got to keep an eye on all the delivery mopeds that, I mean, defy physics, getting through gaps and kind of whipping in front of you. And then the other side of it about, as you say, the traffic and where you can nip out, where you can get in front of people. Do you get a sense of that being in London all the time? Do you feel like a hyper sense of kind of not anxiety but awareness of you it's an assault on the senses, isn't it, riding in the capital?
Yeah, it is. And I think with delivery drivers, with the guys on their scooters, that you just assume they're going to come from anywhere.
Yeah.
And what was really good, and I had a NT1100, so it's a big Honda with panniers and like police ride BMWs, but it's the equivalent of that. And that makes you so spatially aware of what you can go through, what you can't. It was a real sort of learning of, how I probably don't always judge it quite right when I'm on a slightly smaller one. But it's just the risks people take for not being worth it. And I think drivers are actually better now than years ago, just because these guys just come from everywhere. And also, I dread to think how many of them got insurance as well. So
That would be the thing that sticks out. It's funny, being on the back of a bike taxi, they are unbelievably amazing, as you say, judging that space and whipping through traffic. And the bit, I'm sure you've both done it, where you are either filtering or going through a gap. You do that thing where you kind of, you inhale and put yourself together as if you're going to shrink the bike to get through the gap.
And James, what about when you say you're going for a production meeting or you're going somewhere and you turn up on a motorbike? Are people surprised to see you when you take your helmet off? I didn't think you'd ride a bike. Or do people know that you're a motorcyclist?
I don't know, actually. I don't know whether people do or don't. I think it's, if you meet people enough times to know your car, because it's the one mode of transport where you can guarantee you're going to get there within a certain time. You can't rely on the trains. You can't recall everything. Whereas this, okay, you may get slowed down 5 or 10 minutes, but it's not going to be a different day by the time you get there.
The bikes that you've got now, would you swap if you had a dream garage? Would you swap any of them out for anything on the market that you can see, a classic one? I mean, if you take a look at what Ewan's riding, it's an absolute thing of beauty. But as you say about you're commuting on it, Ewan, it would be a slightly it'd look amazing, but it's a slightly different vibe, isn't it, to say like a BMW or something like that.
It looks great, but it's not functional.
I've got a CB1000, which I really, that's brilliant, because it's got the same sort of fire blade engine without being arse over your elbows. I've got a higher booster that's been down the road, not by me, but it's got straight bars on it. It's like a 1100, and that's really nice, but far too much bike for me. If I could have two, I would say RC45 and the RD500 would be just the. They both of them would tell me to get back in my box pretty quickly.
And in terms of some of the adventures you've been on, I know you're a serious biker, so you've covered some great miles. What roads stick out to you? Is there any particular route you've done in the past that you could recommend, or you just think that's a great ride? Every time I go on it, I've got a smile on my face. What sticks out for you?
When I was at Live London and go training in Henley, just leaving London on the M4, which is not the most exciting, but you come off it and then straight into the country road. Within 40 miles, you're out into the country and you can go around the Chilterns. It's pretty special. In terms of also how amazing bikes are, I was doing something for BMW, and it was when Ewan McGregor and Charlie Borman had done the long way round or whatever they did. And they were doing a press thing from Moscow to St. Petersburg on the Adventures 1250. And, just the scale of the landscape there, like you've never seen like electricity pylons like it. They're that scale of it. And then the police stop you and there is no pretending that they're going to do anything but keep the money. So there's that side of it. And then there weren't that many garages. And then this old guy would come out with his hand pump. And God knows what it's pumping into the bike, but it worked, you know. And then if one of the bikes went wrong, some old Russian dude would mend it somehow. They're so resourceful, and yet the scale of the place, in the middle of, it's a long way from one to the other. So before you get sort of the more cosmopolitan St. Petersburg, you're really dealing with farmers middle of nowhere. And what they can do, and how simple, really, an amazing bike like that is, that someone could just mend it, you've probably never seen one before, shows that how special they are. And also, I'm just not happy tinkering with my bike in terms of anything.
No,
because I just like, okay, this is way beyond my pay grade. I want somebody who knows what they're doing to do it.
Absolutely right. That bit about, where you see these pristine garages, and I get sucked into so many kind of wormholes on Instagram where the fella's got everything, it's spotless, and they call it Farkland. You look at it and you just think, well, anything engine-wise, no. Anything to do with the brakes, no. Anything to do with the steering, no. Anything to do with the wheels, no. Or the chain. And so that you kind of go, well, all that's left is for me to put some like stickers on the tank. Yeah. and I'm more than happy it just being sticker on the tank, man, because the rest of it is that Zen in the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. No, just give me something that's safe.
I felt really manly when I put a phone holder onto my handlebars. I thought, yeah.
Which they made idiot proof.
I did it in the street and laid out all the tools for it. So anyone who went past thought he's doing some stuff. I just put my phone holder on. Thought, yeah, that's it. Job done.
Yeah. Yeah, and if it's one of those quad lock ones, they do it so it's the easiest thing, don't they? So you click on and you go, yeah. I got one of those which is the kind of waterproof electrical charger, which when you read it says plug and play. And to the manufacturers, please have in mind the people that think plug and play is literally because it's not. Well, you just splice this and you do it into the where's the fuse? What's a fuse box? What? How am I meant to do that? And the fellow that came round, bless him, who lives in the village, did it. It was an electrical mechanic. I mean, he could have done it with his eyes shut. You did the see you coming a mile off, don't they? That's 40 quid for about 5 minutes. Yeah, that'll do me. As long as the bike will start once I put it on, I'm fine. James, getting back to what a week would look like, like work permitting and all of the responsibilities we get as men of a certain age. Is biking a means of travel, of commuting? Is it preserved for a weekend as a relaxation purpose, or do you get a nice mixture of both?
At the moment, no, commuting is, but then I choose to commute on it for the just for the. I know you can answer phone calls and do everything, but it's really nice to just go in your helmet and turn everything off, and not if you're in a car, there's all stuff going on all the time. So that's really nice. Just a place to think is good. I'm running to be MP at the moment in Colchester. So I'm spending a lot of time travelling around. And I think the constituents think more of you if you turn up on a motorbike than in a flash car.
The motorcycling MP. There you go. There's your podcast done. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm sure that may attract more votes to the party I'm standing for than other things.
I can imagine you're in a position of power, James. I like it.
There we are. I'll take that.
Take it. You got my vote.
Thank you.
Endorsed by Ewan.
James, we always finish the pod with one question that is a bit of a thinker question. We like this one. So I want you to put yourself in a beautiful situation, create that mental image for us. You're going to be riding off into the sunset. Mm-hmm. We know music and bikes go well together, so we need your fantasy ride, where you're going to go, what music you're listening to as well, and what bike are you on. So your dream bike, the music of your choice, and a location that takes you into a heavenly, beautiful headspace. Mm-hmm. Where are you off to?
I would say, the music and location go well. I would go Red Hot Chili Peppers down Highway 1, down the Pacific. So you leave from San Francisco, drive past Mavericks, that big surf break, and then drive down to LA, and you're right past Big Sur. It's all riding next to the Pacific. So yeah, and then I would be on. There's no point in having a sports bike out there, so I'd be on a roadster, not a Harley, but I would be on. I would say it was a bit twitchy when I had it because I think it had been downloaded really badly, but GSXR 1100. Street Fighter was that
nice.
That would be my sort of cruising down with the Chili Peppers down Highway 1.
Yeah, I hope you'll be able to hear your music because you'll be tearing that. That would be wicked. Love it.
I mean, that's so idyllic, that isn't it, Ewan? That's I can smell the sea. I can feel the sun on my face. All of that.
And the Red Hot Chili Peppers wearing nothing but a sock. Love it.
Yeah,
maybe that's not an image we want of James Cracknell. No. I'm sure many people listening would want that image, but yeah.
Yeah, yes. I don't think my socks are as big as the ones that they had, that's for sure.
So I've got a baby sock at home tomorrow.
Perfect. Yeah, well, his ankle
not the size of the sock.
Oh dear.
Right, well, I'll tell you what, sadly, unfortunately, that's about it for this week's full chat. Powered by Bikeshow, as the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, Bikeshow will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your annual bike, scooter or moped insurance.
A massive thank you. I knew he'd be a brilliant guest. Thank you to the one and only Mr. James Cracknell. We've loved it.
Thank you.
James, you've been great. And don't forget to follow us on Apple or Spotify. Please follow or wherever you get your podcast from so that you never miss an episode, or you can watch the whole show on YouTube.
You certainly can. And as ever, from Prots and myself, thank you so much for joining us. Until next time, goodbye.